College football nerds, we are here talking Georgia and Florida. This is a game we circled a while back as being super interesting, and it is every year, so we're going to talk about it. Want to remind y'all, in the comments, give us your score predictions, and we'll get down there with you and talk about that and tell you how you're wrong. Secondly, we are getting a lot of traffic, but we want to make sure that we get subscribers so you'll get our notification when we go live on Saturday night and you come and watch that show. So hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell, and just get on board. It's going to be a fun ride down the stretch. All right, Josh, this is an interesting game because both these teams, you know, quiet last week, and Florida LSU the week before, which gave everybody kind of an eye-opening, like, what's going on with Florida, especially giving up 49 points. I want you to spend a minute maybe breaking down that game, like, real quick, like 60, 90 seconds, to give some context for some questions we're going to have after we look at the model, after we talk about this matchup, just to give some color and some background as we get into this discussion.
The LSU game is a tough one to draw a lot from. There are a lot of things that happened in that game, a lot of things that were negative for Florida. And there are three things that I want to sort of establish. The first thing is, sometimes when teams face an offense that starts running particularly power, pin and pull stuff, I have seen multiple times a team just kind of get confused by it and not know how to defend it. LSU was running the same counter trap, pin and pull offense the entire game. Florida clearly wasn't prepared for that offense, and it didn't work. Now, the next week, Ole Miss was prepared for it. Orgeron, being Orgeron, said, oh, this worked last week, I'm going to do it again, and it fell flat. I don't think Florida's a worse run defense than Ole Miss, so I think a lot of it was just a lack of preparation for what they saw. The next thing I want to say is, really, it's twofold. Florida had an issue where they had four interceptions in the game, and the game was long enough that with those four interceptions and the stalls and the amount of time LSU had the ball, they were able to run it down their throat late in the game. And what I mean by that is 13 possessions, four of them are intercepted, so that's about a quarter of your possessions get thrown away. LSU actually only scored on 50% of their drives. They put up 49 points, but they had the ball enough to put up 100. But when you throw the ball away on four turnovers, when you have a pick six, it becomes really, really hard to keep pace, and they still scored 42 and still lost. So ultimately, my opinion is there are some red flags there for sure. This is a game Mullen has overlooked previously, but I really don't want to take too much from that game just in terms of what it means for Florida in terms of how good they are versus Georgia. Because that 49-42 score doesn't give Georgia bonus points. It can only be used to determine how good Florida is as a team. In a game, they're going to be much more motivated.
I think there's a little context too. Like, it was a perfect trap game. Florida had been through a pretty grindy stretch in their schedule, and Georgia fans were not making excuses for Florida or telling you, you know, how they're going to beat you or whatever, but I think it's worth talking about. Like, this was a grindy stretch. Florida was in desperate need of a bye, and they were, I think, overlooking LSU, and they got bit. But the flip side of that, Josh, is Georgia fans are going to say, hey, okay, Florida is the kind of team that's going to throw four interceptions, including a pick six, against a bad defense. What the heck are they going to do against a good defense? Eight interceptions and two pick sixes?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The question you have to ask is how much of that is sort of endemic to the Florida offense? How much of it was being a bad day? Again, you know, what you do against a team previously does not mean you're going to do the same thing again. My concern is that was the fourth game this year from Florida in seven games where they threw at least two interceptions. So at some point, you start to get concerned that interceptions are part of their game. Now, a lot of Florida fans, and this is another topic of conversation, right, are going to say, well, Anthony Richardson came in and we turned things around. But do you agree with that? I mean, do you think, now, and I'll throw this out right now, okay, Anthony Richardson, 10 of 19, 167 yards, 8.8 per, three touchdowns, two picks. Jones was 12 of 19, 161 yards, 8.5 per, one touchdown and two interceptions. The difference being Richardson had two more touchdowns than Jones, but in terms of completion percentage, yards per attempt, number of interceptions, and total yards, they had almost the same stats. So do you buy that Richardson is the guy, and is he something that can turn it around, or are you going to get kind of the same result with either guy in your mind?
No, I think that there's a couple of things here. One, I think Emory Jones, to me, emerged from camp as the starter for a reason. I've always kind of held onto this, that like when we see backup quarterbacks flashing when a starter is flailing, a lot of times once there's tape on that backup quarterback, we saw with Caleb Williams this weekend, once there's tape on the backup quarterback looks like he did in camp and shows us why he wasn't the starter. And, you know, Richardson has, you know, everybody's going to say, well, he brings his legs to the table, but he wasn't really a factor running the ball in this game either. So from that standpoint, I think that you've got to find a guy and stick with your guy. If it's going to be Richardson, great. If it's going to be Emory Jones, stick with that guy and win or lose with him. But pick one. It's you know, we're rolling into November here. You got to figure that out. All right, we got to talk about Georgia a little bit too, Josh. But before we do, I think we should lead with the model because there's some interesting stuff on both how Vegas sees this, maybe more from an over-under perspective than how than the spread itself, relative to how our model sees this game. So let's go ahead, break out the model, and then kind of have that drive our discussion off of it.
So our model has this game, Georgia 29, Florida 18. Now, if you've been following us, our model is not always 100% on, but it's been pretty good with Georgia. It had them with 34 points exactly against Auburn. Last week, it had Georgia 25-16. I'll give Daniel a shout-out because he actually predicted that game 30-13. I think I had it 27-13. So we've been pretty on with Georgia, as has our model to this point in the year. And it's interesting to me that it has this game 29-18 because it's not a total blowout. It's an 11-point game. And yeah, that means Georgia has a significant edge. But considering where Florida's, you know, like ranked or not ranked as the case is, and regarded, you know, not a huge differential. When you dig into the stats, what susses out is a little unsurprising. Georgia is top-end elite rush defense, 51% of opponent averages. At this point, pushing the best our model has ever recorded. We always talked about when they played better teams, the defense was going to look better just because it was going to give them an opportunity to basically distinguish themselves. And Georgia's pass defense, 70% of opponent averages is elite. It's totally elite defense on every manner. Florida, 92% of opponent rushing averages, 80% of opponent passing averages. That's actually a pretty good pass defense. 82% is good. 92% against run is purely average by SEC standards, certainly, but even nationally and in conference play, that's not really all that impressive. The problem comes down to how limited Georgia's offense has been, both in terms of yardage and especially scoring off that yards. Georgia, 4.8 yard per carry, great 10 yard per attempt, but doesn't throw the ball that much. And given that Florida has a good pass defense, it sort of expects a 4.5 yard per carry, 8.2 yard per attempt. What I consider what we always say, that's right at the mark for competence, not excelling. Florida, 3 yards per carry, 5.6 yards per attempt. Those are really anemic numbers. And so you get a yardage total, it's about 50% in Georgia's favor, 6 yard per play to about 4.3. The problem is, and we've talked about this all year, Georgia is not generating great points from yardage. Georgia had 8.85 yards per play against Kentucky. Almost 9 yards per play, and they got 30 points. Earlier in the year, this has happened a couple times, right? Like, Georgia can get pretty good, consistent yardage. Even Clemson was 4.2 yards per play is kind of solid, and they don't score a ton. Meanwhile, like Florida last week, 2 yards per play less than Georgia had, and they scored 42. So that's kind of why our model has this close-ish. It's the lack of explosion, really, from Georgia. And it's Florida's ability to have some explosive plays and scoring plays, despite the turnovers. And this gets into a little bit stylistically, I think, the differences in these teams and how they need to play, and everything goes on. And I'll note, 29-18 is interesting to me, too, because if you look at the over-under, which is currently 50 points, and the spread, which is about 14, that comes out to 32-18 as the Vegas line and over-under combo. Our model is not based on the Vegas line, but it is right in line with that. So it seems like a game where Florida's going to look to score 20 and Georgia's going to look to score 30. And that seems to be where everybody's headed.
And I think that Georgia fans, like, they might be frustrated with the model. They've let us know that. Somebody even let us know in the comments this week how we totally missed the Georgia-Kentucky game. Like, you can't do better than picking the exact score. But anyway, I think in the back of Georgia fans' mind, they want to see Georgia murder everybody to feel like they're the best team in the country. And I don't agree with that. Yes, you need to murder bad teams to be the best team in the country. But one, 2021 is a weird year where we've got Illinois beating Penn State. We've got the quality level seems up and down and really weird. So beating Auburn 34-10 or whatever it was, beating Kentucky 30-13 or whatever it was, one, in this year, you'll take that. Look at Alabama. They've already got a loss. But two, Josh, and I want you to touch on this for a little bit. Like, I think there's this assumption that Kentucky's and Auburn's are bad teams, and so Georgia should be killing them by 50, when in reality, and I'm going to throw Florida in there too, Georgia's facing good teams, and that's why they're not beating them. And if the view was a little different, like if Georgia played Penn State in week three and beat them 34-10, Georgia would be a lot more excited about that win than the one they got against Auburn, when in reality, those are about the same level of team, and we just don't have them rank where we should, or the quality is misperceived. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I think it is. I mean, Arkansas was sort of the big win, and then they fell off, and now that one doesn't have the same shine it used to have, but I don't think they're necessarily a bad team either. Look, Georgia is more or less dominating every one of these games. And why I say dominating is they're winning them in a fashion where the other team never really is in a position to be able to win. And even this score at 29-18 still kind of suggests that, because it doesn't necessarily mean that Florida is going to be within a touchdown late. I mean, it's a lot of times this is more reflective of backdoor covers and whatnot. So the question is whether or not you can, you know, really distance yourselves. But this gets in, I think, a little bit philosophically to what Georgia is this year and sort of the conundrum, right? I think the thing that's in a lot of Georgia fans' minds, or at least this is always my consideration with Georgia, is the playoff and is the fact that you're going to have to play quite likely Alabama in the SEC Championship and Ohio State in the playoff if you want to win a national title. And those teams are capable of scoring more than 30 points, even against an elite defense. Georgia learned this lesson last year. We pointed it out in our preview against Alabama. We were 100% right. Elite offenses are going to score over 30 points. And truly elite offenses will score 40 points or more, even against a top, top-end defense. It's just too difficult to stop teams in this RPO era if they've got first-round draft pick or high-level receivers and quarterbacks, because you can't defend it properly. The rules are too in favor of the offense. And so with Georgia, I think the concern here is, can they start breaking this 30 to 37 point ceiling it feels like they have offensively against solid teams? And how do you do that? And I'll give you my answer. I think the answer is they've got to find more downfield production with the receivers. I know every Georgia fan loves Bowers. I know Bowers is a great tight end, and he is a great tight end. But other than, when you're not playing UAB, Bowers is not going to have a lot of 70-yard touchdown passes for you against good competition.
I don't know, man. According to Georgia fans on our live show, he runs like a 3.940 and is 6'10", 462 pounds. So I don't know if you're right there, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great guy and he's a great weapon. And they're like the example I give would be Notre Dame. Notre Dame has had some first, second round tight ends that were studs in recent years, right? I mean, that's obvious, isn't it? And like, do you not see the same thing, right? How much production, Daniel, have you seen out of all those tight ends? Because Notre Dame has been able to beat good quality teams through the year. But isn't it also true that when they go up against a high-level offense and you rely on tight ends and you rely on the short passing game, those guys can't produce enough to win those games? And Georgia's got the talent, but isn't it true that that other talent does have to come through? I mean, am I crazy for saying that in order for them to get to the point where they can score 40?
Yeah, and the counterpoint I had to that is, you know, maybe he is an elite tight end. Maybe he is on par with Pitts, which I think it's a little bit of a stretch, but I'll just for argument's sake, let's say he is. 2020 Florida had other first-round draft pick wide receivers out there eating, which made defenses have to be honest on Pitts, which is why he was able to eat two. So that, I think, underscores your point in that, like, okay, look, you might have a great weapon at tight end. You actually have two really great weapons at tight end. But you've got to get your outside or your slot receiver vertical threats going to really be able to lean on, you know, these tight ends also in a big game against a good team. I will say a little bit of pushback on what Georgia fans have seen in previous offenses, because I don't think there's any evidence to suggest that 2021 Alabama's defense or offense is as anywhere in the same stratosphere as 2020 or 2019 LSU. I don't see that offense. Even at Ohio State right now, I don't see that offense. I think that, yes, good teams, good offenses can score 30-something on Georgia maybe. I don't know that they're scoring the 41 that Alabama did last year. But I think that brings us to a pretty interesting point that I'd like to talk about before we get into our picks. And that is, for Florida in this game, like, what's the minimum number of points they need or you think they can win this game with if things go their way? Like, what's that minimum number that you think they've got to... Because what we're thinking about here is, put Georgia's offense off the table for a second. Can Florida score the bare minimum they're going to need against this defense? And what is that number?
And I think that's the concern for Georgia, is that number might not be that high if everything goes right for Florida. I think it's conceivable for a team to hold Georgia under 24 points. I would say the minimum, probably about 21 points. I don't think you can probably realistically hold Georgia under 21 at this point. They're too efficient. They found enough stuff that works that they can move the ball some. And that Clemson game from the opener, you know, where JT Daniels is hurt and they had a lot more guys out, is a little bit out of the picture. But I do think if Florida gets everything together and plays the way that they're capable of playing, you can hold Georgia, I think, to 20. If everything goes your way, I think you can hold them to 20 or 21. The concern is that, like, you're, and I agree with you, like, I don't think there is an offense that's as good as 2019 LSU or 2020 Alabama on the table. I don't know that anybody's going to score 40 on Georgia. So, but can you score 30? And I don't know that Florida's at a level where they can do that either. So the problem for Florida is, even if 21's your number, can you hit 21? Can you hit 24? You might need some things going your way. You might need a vertical passing game. And this comes to an ultimate point, which I sort of pinged you on earlier. In my opinion, the only path for victory for Florida in this game probably revolves around really Emory Jones and throwing the ball and hoping that works. Because Anthony Richardson is a cheat code, but he is a cheat code against teams where he can play backyard ball, scramble, use his legs, and then find a guy open for a bomb. He is not going to read coverage and make quick decisions in a game where he is kept in the pocket and make that offense run. And Florida, through a lot of the rest of the year, I think could be well served to have Richardson and to go to more of a Cam Newton power run offense. But they don't have the receiving threats, and the era of football now is such where you can't run that style of offense and score enough. And Georgia defensively is way too good against the run to be able to do that. So you've got to be able to throw. And I just don't think Richardson is equipped right now from a developmental standpoint to be able to make quick reads and quick decisions and throw the ball the way that he needs to throw to be able to score even 24 points if we set 21 as that minimum number.
Yeah, and I just want to make a quick point on the Clemson game. People keep bringing that up and without the context of it being the first game of the season. Teams feel each other out on a lot of unknowns in the opener. There's no tape on what you're going to do as a team in the opener, offensively or defensively. That's why we see teams getting exploited down the line because of what they've shown on tape, where they might have won or had a close loss against a really good team and not be that good team throughout the year. Teams get better or worse as the year goes on. Georgia and Clemson were feeling each other out in that game with a lot of unknowns. So you don't attack certain things that you know now that you could attack and be successful. So I think that people are holding Georgia to a weird standard. You're right, they had a lot of people out. I'm ready to give my score on this. I've got Georgia 31, Florida 20. I think Florida is good enough offensively to scrape some points together. And I think that this goes back to the point I made before. I think Georgia fans don't, if this turns out 31-20 and I pick another perfect score, just like I said with 30-13 with Kentucky, that's a good number. Don't be mad about that. Like, you're still number one in the country if you hit that number. I think Florida is a better team, has better athletes, and has some better recruiting than they are getting credit for. They could beat a lot of these teams on any given day, especially rested. So if Georgia wins this 31-20, I'm saying you're still getting all the AP votes at number one, and you earned a very good win that you can take home and be proud of. Give me your score.
So that was a score I was originally going to pick, but I'll change my mind anyway. Just for the sake of it this time, I'll say 27-17. And ultimately, I think the problem for Georgia is that you're going to get Dan Mullen's A game. And I truly believe Mullen has a habit of picking teams where he think he can win without putting a lot of effort into it and using that as like an extra prep week. I think he did it against LSU last year before the SEC championship game. I'm suspicious that he just did it again before he plays Georgia. And I think they're going to get Florida's best shot, bar none, probably the best shot that Florida's going to give anybody all season. But I do think Florida's going to struggle to score. I think Georgia will struggle to score on offense, but Florida just makes too many errors. I think they're going to give Georgia some points in this game, and I think that's what's going to let Georgia get that two-score margin and have something like a 27-17 win.
And since we've got some friendly, familiar Braves fan faces watching this, I want to give y'all a shout-out. If you want to see my live reaction, because we were recording this during Game 6 of NLCS last night, you should go check it out. I just want to give a shout-out to you Braves fans. Excited for this run that we've had so far. Y'all let us know in the comments what you think this score is going to be. Hit that subscribe button. Thanks so much, y'all. Have a great week, and God bless.